Okay, so I'd like to welcome everyone to the OR Architecture and API meeting, take two. So this is a continuing effort to develop the details for the architecture and API for the OR. If you just move to the next slide, just a brief review there of the OR requirements that were specified quite a long time ago concerning the just general aspects of the OR, that it be the architecture be scalable, the repository be distributed, and the specification being sufficiently detailed and platform independent to allow implementation. So these are all aspects that we would like to address at this meeting. In addition, we'd certainly like to have support for ontologies that have various groups of reasoning. And we would also like to support distributed repositories. We're going to have a number of panelists today who will be addressing this issue specifically. And the last one is that the repository architecture shall not require a hierarchical structure. Next slide. The number of architectural principles that we would like to follow. Just a review of material here. Keep the responsibilities decoupled. Keep an implementation dependent and independent, and to use ontologies as much as we can. So now I'd like to begin by moving directly to the panelists. We have at least four talks today. I'll begin with the talk with Todd Schneider, talking about activities in the architecture area. That's basically the take one. Then move on to this distinguished group from Semantic Technology Laboratory. Not completely familiar with them, but I'm sure they will be giving you some excellent description of their work on the ontology repositories. And then the group from the University of Helsinki and Aalto University from Finland. And working on linked ontology repositories. And I hope that Matthew Kine will show up. I'm not sure he will, because he hasn't contacted us. And finally, Eric Chan, who is at Oracle, will be telling us about how to enable contextual collaboration in the OR. So now let's just move on to my slide. Why don't you begin the presentation? Why don't I begin and then I'll move over to you?
Okay. We can go past the first two slides, because you've already covered that material, I believe.
So the first two slides are basically just what we... Oh, no, the first slide.
It's just the first two?
Slide number two is the architectural principles that I just mentioned. Slide three, actually, is a list of the core requirements that we were using as a guide to the development. We've also developed a set of use cases to help the requirements. So the core OOR requirements specifically mentioned governance of ontologies and related items, and so that led to the development of a gatekeeper to handle the workflows associated with governing ontologies, managing them. And of course, one an important part of the OOR start was to have a mechanism for easily discovering ontologies appropriate for your particular application. Another important aspect was that it wasn't going to be a centralized repository. It was going to be a federation to allow multiple linked communicating ontology repositories. It's also very important to have multiple language support, and I suppose that can be taken in many ways, multiple natural languages as well as multiple ontology languages. And, of course, the importance of platform independence to make it possible to have many implementations. The OOR initiative is only concerned with building reference implementation. And arbitrary knowledge domains. So moving on to the next slide, slide four. This is the initial take one architecture that I proposed based on those principles. We can see that it addresses this issue of the management by having workflow service to act as the gatekeeper, and then storage of the storage provenance are handled by registrar, and of course finding and searching ontologies was handled with query metadata. We've since changed this on this suggested on architecture to address some issues that later came up. And if you move to slide I, you'll see what Todd and I have been working on to get a better architecture that can also address issues such as inference, which really hadn't discussed, hadn't included in my initial architecture. So Todd, why don't you take over at this point?
Okay.
A lot of this is your work.
Well, as you can see, unfortunately, the diagram is very busy. But in order to meet the modularity requirements, the decoupling of capabilities, I believe this is the only way to go. Now, we're proposing this. We're not telling everyone that this is the final thing. I still have some confusions about it, but I hope we can get some feedback that will allow us to clarify things and make every or and gain consensus on this. One of the problems I'm having is we can introduce this concept of workflow, which I think is really crucial. However, as you can see, this is done in UML. I'm using a tool called Enterprise Architect. The tool can export things into UML. Ken has been having some problems importing that into other tools. But to facilitate the collaboration among everybody, I think we're going to have to use something like this. It's a common representation mechanism that everyone's sort of familiar with. So the workflow part, I'm not sure how to model. Now, little infinity signs you see in the lower right-hand corners of some of the components, the symbol for components in EA, indicates that you can drill down into that. Now, Peter, I can provide an HTML version of this model that we could post to the OOR site if you'd like, and it allows it to support the drill-down capabilities. Now, each of these has some dialogue text behind it, but that's not in these slides today. So as you can see, it looks mostly the same as what Ken had. We didn't include inference, and we included this new thing called fines. So if you go to slide 6, Peter, I'm just going to go through each of those boxes that have, or each of the boxes, and show you the parts of the drill down. So the presentation section. Now, one thing I was thinking about, and I haven't discussed this with Ken yet, is that presentation is presentation to what? It's sort of a binary relation. You're presenting, someone is presenting something to someone else or something else. So in this case, I specifically identified this as human presentation, that is, what is presented to humans. We may also want to extend this by saying what is presented to other machines. So if we're going to have machine-to-machine interactions, that is, in terms of federation, that might be part of presentation, but maybe not. So some simple-minded things, we have to log in. The presentation component has to be able to deal with bind capabilities, which we'll talk about. And then, of course, people have preferences when it comes to human interactions. And now, this other group of capabilities, workflow. This, I believe, is probably not correct at this point, but this gives you some of the ideas that have to be addressed in terms of the workflow. Because, I mean, what are the basic things you need to do in the registry? You have to register something, the ontology. You have to delete it. You have to update it. You have to manage it. Managing it can be in terms of permission, can be in terms of taking care of voting, and perhaps other things that I haven't thought of yet. So if you go on to slide 7, this is the next box, the registrar. So these are the functionalities that provide the actual registration capability. We also have to register metadata. So that's a crucial part for the find operation. Then there's policy enforcement, or we could call this governance. Of course, we have to manage the version. That's separate from actually registering the ontology, but that's also related to policy enforcement, which isn't represented here. And of course, then there's the metadata management. That we have not fully worked out yet. So go on to slide 8. Now, these are the find functionalities. And I have to admit, at this point, I'm still not sure this is the best way to decompose it. So if on the left, there's essentially find across languages. So it could be the case that someone wants to find ontologies across all possible representation languages that one or more repositories is supporting. In which case, then you have to go down through the various possibilities. Are they looking for an ontology? Are they looking for a concept? Are they looking for a relation? Or perhaps there's some other items in the metadata itself that you might want to look for. Now, as you see over here in the lower right-hand corner, I have a separate functionality currently represented as an interface. Again, this may not be the best mechanism to represent it, but for now we can use it to discuss things with. Find in the metadata. Now, the issue of the metadata and how it's represented has not been resolved, and it should be a point of discussion. Hopefully that is represented ontologically, so there'd be some simple line consistency, at least for the metadata. And then, if you're going to find in an ontology, well, you're going to find a concept with a relation, or I'm not sure what else. But there should be a decomposition of the find capability that makes sense across ontologies and across the metadata for the ontology and then in an ontology itself. And of course, this then supports the search capability that Ken mentioned earlier. So if you go on to slide 9. Workflow.
Todd, I could address this part.
Okay, please, Ken.
The idea of workflow is to have processes. So the idea is that even something as simple as uploading an ontology, you would think would be just upload it. But that turns out to be a lot more complicated. You know, you do have to put all this provenance and metadata information in. And then you have to ask that the ontology be uploaded, and that can take a while. So, you would like to be then notified when the upload has been completed. And then other activities occur in the background, such as, ordinary syntax checking, consistency checking, possibly even, a review, depending on, which group you're involved in. So something as seemingly straightforward as upload an ontology turns out to have a whole process behind it. So the idea was to develop a workflow system, which we actually have a prototype system for this, using a business process modeling language. And the idea is that each group can then upload their processes appropriate to, you know, how elaborate they want their governance to be. And then the workflow engine, which is then go through notify the appropriate individuals and possibly even, you know, draft them a little bit to get their reviews in, things like that. Appropriate to whatever process is being performed. So, I mean, the core functionality is quite clear that you need to have syntax checking, logical consistency, the ability to map between ontologies, and, of course, upload, update, mapping. The other parts are just concerned with, you know, the various roles that people play in the sub-processes, establishing the processes, possibly updating the processes. So there's this sort of the, just the process functionality that also has to be addressed. Okay, so I guess we can move on to slide 10. The persistence, and this is a, this has been an issue that, you know, we have had some, quite a bit of discussions about exactly how should you persist your ontologies. You know, should it be just a generic relational database? Should it be an RDF store? There has certainly been some controversy actually about, you know, what would be the most appropriate way to persist, since we do want to be language, ontology language independent. Todd, do you have any comments about this?
Yes, after listening to some of Michael's discussions and others from Cameron, I believe it's going to have to be the case that OORs, if they support multiple languages, may have to support multiple persistence mechanisms.
Sounds like that's going to be the...
Maybe as a practical matter, that will make sense in terms of people being able to develop these modules independently so they can plug them in and be able to support the multiple languages. I realize in terms of operation and deployment, that can be really a larger burden. However, unless we come up with a really brilliant solution, I don't see another possibility at this point.
Yes, it does seem to be the case. I guess we don't have too much more to say about the remaining slides.
Right. You can move on to slide 11, Peter, and it'll indicate
slide
how
11.
Yeah, indicate how far we've gotten. Similarly on slide 12, the Federation.
Federation. So these are basically unsolved now.
Yeah.
IOPortal has a solution to administration, but it is very specific to their particular needs. So that really doesn't seem to be general.
Now, be careful here. The administration part had to do with administering the entire system. Now, the part about administering users is certainly part of that, but that's also coupled, I believe, with the registrar and or the workflow.
Yes, but I was referring to that. I mean, if you look at the administrative aspects on BioPortal, there are things like updating the cache, you know, or that kind of, you know, really system administration.
Yeah, there's implementation-specific administration capabilities.
Yeah.
Which have to be addressed at some point. But then there's the other parts of the administration that would be necessary for any implementation.
Exactly. And we're not clear yet on what this should be. So those are all of our slides. Let's move on then to the next speaker. Alessandro and Aldo?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Peter, can you
hear me?
Slide? Yes, we hear you.
Yeah. In principle, I wanted the real developers for Quest to present the feedback here, for several reasons. Alessandro, I think, is still in travel and to the Japan. Another one had some family problems. So I tried to do my best in introducing some of these concepts, but in case we can schedule some other occasion to go in deeper detail about this. So this slide one during the presentation is joint work made in the context of the ITS project, which is Interactive Knowledge Stack. It's a EU-funded integrating project. With the overall goal is to support semantics into contact management systems. And in particular, we are developing one portion of this stack, which is, by the way, also self-consistent, which is made of some components for supporting knowledge representation and reasoning for the elements of CMS, but can be used also in other infrastructures. So the slide two, we can see, you can try it, there's a working demo of these addresses. Also this infrastructure is now part of an Hash incubator called Standard. Okay, and then we told you that it's the semantic part of the CMS stack for the IJS project. So slide two, the main components. So this is not really an ontology repository, although it can be easily related to, associated with ontology repositories, but it's rather a manager for network ontologies or ontology networks. Particularly the national ontology network has been developed particularly in another European project called NEON. But it is not here as a because it's not seen in slides. Maybe the idea is that you may want to configure certain ontologies with some dependencies and relations between them for a particular purpose. And then this can be an ontology network, and this can be highly customized, and typically you may want to work in a particular, for a particular task or project with this limited amount of ontologies, and then you restrict your scope within your ontology project. So when you see that this national scope is present heavily in these components. By the way, this manager for the ontology network is then supposed to support inference and rules, as well as re-engineering and refactoring of ontologies. And in by the way, the architecture is open to other plugins, especially for linking ontologies at the instance level. And this is released either as RESTful services and or as Java APIs. So slide four, we can see now how the ontology network manager works. First, you see the notion of scope. The scope is a container, and actually is an ontology network that manages it in the way it has that and serves a specific purpose. So the first thing that is done is an integrity check, of the scope is some scope that tries to make an integrity check over a certain ontology. that you want to validate before using this content for purpose of managing and annotating pages in a content management system. Now, there are two parts in the within types of ontologies that are used within a scope. The core ontologies are the ontologies that are not changeable and are shared with the other clients. For example, if you want the DPD ontology to address DPD because it contains a lot of records that are typically used in the semantic CMS. Of course, these core ontologies also can be changed and configured. And custom ontologies can be modified and shared as well with the clients, and this can be configured directly by the final user. Okay, and let's see now slide five. The manager for rules and inference. This allows support for rules that are expressed in a particular syntax, a simplified syntax for languages like Swirl or Reef, and they are executed either as Swirl or Spark or Construct. And this can be executed on a specified scope. support for reusable rules is done to the definition of recipes. Recipes is another direction which is very important. You have sets of rules for doing certain tasks. The reusable support is provided through our link interfaces, and there is a reasoner that comes built in with the components, which is Herrick. In slide 6, there is another component that is currently installed by default, which is Selenium. This is a tool for re-engineering and refactoring ontologies. Re-engineering is also based on different plugins that you may want to use for transforming different resources. Currently, you have two plugins, one for relational databases, the other one for XML. And so by using the meta level of these resources, you can transform these into RDF. And then the refactoring components based on recipes, so based on sets of rules, can be used for transforming these basic re-engineering of non-RDF resources into RDF and DAO. Consider that, for example, the current implementation uses the OWL API, so it's not a pure linked data stuff, but it's something that uses also OWL as a its specificity. Slide 7. Okay, this is an example of a user story by one content management system provider that wants to use some semantic components, some reasoning. And we have found out that okay, this can be a directory in the context of the pros and cons. Of course, I'm not going to detail this slide. It's just for giving you the idea that the requirements from which we started is that we want to help really using ontologies within existing implementations of things that are broadly used. So it's not just for the management ontologies, but for the idea of this infrastructure is to enable the use of ontologies in real-world tasks that where sometimes it's not completely clear if adding, for example, the representation of reasoning components helps with respect to existing database management systems. So in slide 8 and the following slides, you can see in a more detailed way how the architecture and the usage of these different packages are represented. First of all, I think that with the 10-minute slot is not... I can put them there in order to give you more chances to realize what this stuff is about, but I don't think it's enough time to present it. And also, I would like to add that the technical people to do it better than me, definitely. So in case there is interesting for all that, I can schedule you possibly a presentation that is dedicated just to the use of these things. So the summary of the services that are currently in place is given in slide 13, where you see larger size the picture about what services are in, so you can see that the Ontology Network Manager provides functionality of manager session and ontologies, and session like enriching ontology, classifying it, checking the consistency of the ontology, applying rules, or applying rules is provided by the reasoning components, and re-engineering and refactoring is provided by the same component. Okay, so I guess that it's better that I stop here and possibly try to answer your questions for probably social understanding better what this stuff is about.
Thank you very much. That was very interesting. I'm particularly intrigued by the fact that you have a series of components with RESTful interfaces. We're using similar approach. So it would be, I think it would be quite compatible. We just need to, you know, kind of get the architectures aligned, and I think we could definitely, you know, make use of components here. So let's move on to the
Yeah, I can reply just about that.
Yeah, let's have some questions. Any questions?
Yeah, just to comment on what you say. Definitely, yeah, the idea is that the reason also why I push people very much to present this in the context of this repository initiative is that this can be used also in, together with existing ontology repositories. For example, one of our projects involves the coupling of these with the ontology design patterns and the XT tools for ontology design. And definitely also integration with the repository, and that seems to be really pretty interesting for us, just to confirm what you were suggesting.
Yes. So, are there any other questions?
Yes, good question.
Comments?
Yes, this is Jeff. A good question. Oh. Also, do you have anything for mapping? I'm talking in terms of previous slides. Mapping several ontologies. Kind of how to map several ontologies.
Okay.
What do you have for it?
Yeah, currently no component is installed like that, but as you can see from the architecture, it's just currently, besides the network manager, we have only the rules and reasoning and the engineering and factoring components. But of course, you can take another component that makes ontology mapping, ontology matching in general, and you can plug it here. For example, we did it, and it's almost ready, that's why you don't see yet in the demo. We plugged in the SIG component for ontology linking, but at the instance level. So we will take an 8-box, for example, 2 8-boxes, or 2 RDF datasets, and try to find automatic linkages. And this was pretty big, I should say. So it's interesting to notice how easy this architecture is to provide. Of course, if the component has not a very compatible API, some additional work we can do.
We have a question from MyCoin.
Yes. I'm curious about in IKS, you mentioned about room and inference, but you mentioned about SparkQL. How does the SparkQL provide you a mechanism to implement rules as compared to JS, for example? And the second question I have is, you store this in the RDBMS. I'm curious about how this is being stored in the relational database that will provide a way for applications to retrieve data and using all of these constraints and rules that people define with an ontology and ready to do reasoning.
Okay, yes, quite broad question. So the first one was about, if I understand well, you asked why Sparkle has been indicated as in relation to rules. So this goes to the general practices that are currently in place to implement rules within, when using RDF datasets and ontologies. So a rule basically can, if you go, for example, at the RIF specification, you can implement such rules, sometimes even in the core out to exclusivity by means of property chains, for example, or you can encode them by using SWIR, or you can even use a Sparkle contract. Of course, the kind of services, and especially of checking of the consistency of firing these rules is very different. Simply, what is intended there is that you can use either SWIR and Sparkle engines in order to have these rules. Of course, they lead possibly to different effects. Concerning the second question, if I understand well again, is how we can integrate database management system functionalities that are typical in CMS with ontologies. And this is, by the way, for answering this question, it's better that you look at the full documentation of IKS. because the full stack has at least three or four layers, let's say four main layers. The first one, the bottom one, is managing the storage of CNS data in CRDS, and there are specific components to put together existing DBS functionalities in the triple store in SBF. The second layer is about adding scope leafing, and it's about adding extraction, information extraction functionalities. The third one is the knowledge representation reasoning, which is CRES, and the fourth is an interaction layer. So that is a quite complex thing that you should look at, if I understood the other question, of course.
Okay, well, we're running out of time. We should really get moving to the to our next speakers, who are from Finland. So, Jim and
okay, thank you, Ken. So, I and also my colleague Kim Viljanen is present here today. We are from Aalto University and University of Helsinki, Finland, and the topic of our presentation for architecture towards a network of linked ontology repositories. And let's move on to the next slide, too. Okay, so the starts with a couple of words from our background, and then we ask a question, is there a one-size-fits-all OOR solution? After that, we propose an OOR architecture, and finally we discuss what should we do next. And please forgive us some of these issues have already been discussed, so. Okay, next slide, slide three, please. Okay, so we are a part of Semantic Computing Research Group, SECO, in Finland, and our group has been running a FinOnto project which aims to build a national semantic web infrastructure here in Finland. The project has been worked on from 2002, and part of the project we have been building this Onki ontology repository, which has been running publicly available from 2008. And the use cases we have been focusing on in this ontology repository Onki work have been annotating contents and also ontology based, of course, here's some of the key publications related to the Onki work and all the other publications from the website below. Okay, next slide, four. So what do we bring to the table? Well, as said, we have been building this national semantic web infrastructure, and OOR maybe aims to build this sort of same things on a global level. And we have been running this ontology repository, and we have some experience from it. Defined this API called LOOS, Linked Open Ontology Services, which is a API for distributed repositories. At the moment, it has been only tested with Onki repositories, but the idea is that there can be different kind of ontology repositories, and on top of the network forming of these servers, you can make some user interfaces, for example, doing global search over the network. And we have implemented Onki Selector widget, which is a user interface component that can be integrated with web pages, and it can be used to annotate content, so fetching ontological concepts from ontologies to content, and also for ontology-based information retrieval. And Onki consists of different user interfaces for different ontologies, so we have implemented Onki Scores for thesaurus-like ontologies and Onki Geo for geo-ontologies. Okay, next slide. And here we have a couple of screenshots from our services. There is the three registry of ontologies and the multi-facet search over these ontologies. And there's the Google Maps visualization of a municipality. And then there's the ONGI Selector widget for getting ontological concepts into legacy systems. And then there's the ontologic browser. Okay, next slide, slide six. So why do we want to participate in the OPPA project? Well, we would like to share and develop best practices, for example, APIs and specifications, not some tools and components. Then we want to improve our ONGI repository, which contains mainly Finnish ontologies. We want to improve it with some international ontology repositories by making a network of repositories. I would, of course, like to network and build a global community of ontology repository-related research and usage in our work. Okay, next slide, seven. We argue that there might be one-size-fits-all solution for an ontology repository. Within our work, we have identified that there are, for example, different related to ontologies. For example, there are metadata creators, so users who are trying to describe their contents with ontologies, and on the other hand, there's end users that, for example, search for information, and ontologies are used to enhance the queries, and then there's the develop the ontologies, and they need, for example, tools and publishing channels for ontologies. And then there's the software developers and some other use cases, of course. And on the other hand, there are users with different background skills. So there are non-expert users who use systems like ontology annotation systems once in a year, for example, annotating there. And then there's the subject specialists who use ontologies every day. And then there's different types of ontologies, like thesaurus and ontologies, and they need different kind of visualizations and user interfaces. And then there's different kinds of ontology service providers, for example. Corporates might want to publish their ontologies only inside the corporate network, and on the other hand, there's like ONGI ontology service, which is a public service. So from based on these observations, we ask, is it possible to implement a single OOR server that fulfills all these needs and all other needs that we don't know yet? Okay, next slide, slide eight. So the on the ecosystem of ontology repositories looks something like this in a view. So there's BioPortal and ONGI.fi, Cupboard, and all other implementations. They are not interlinked. So what could we do together to combine these efforts? Next slide, nine. Okay, so in revision OR binds these implementations and forms a network of repositories and offers an OOR registry that can be used to find ontologies and ontology repositories from this network. Slide 10. So ontology repositories can implement OOR API with this different ontology repositories can communicate together in a P2P fashion, and for users of ontology repository X can also benefit from the contents and services of ontology repository Y. Okay, and next slide. So this is the actual global OOR architecture. So there's also another OOR API that can put a registry of all the repositories in the network. And on top of this registry, global search can be built and all kinds of other applications that combine contents and services from the network. Okay, next, 12. So what do we think the APIs should be like? Well, we propose a modular APIs for different kinds of needs. For example, there could be a OOR content API. It can be used to get a specific concept or an ontology or a repository. So this is like read-only API. And then there's the OOR search API, which can be used to query for concepts, ontologies, repositories by using, for example, keywords and other restrictions. And then there's the OOR update API, which is a write API, and it used to update the contents of repositories. So the ontologies can be updated with this. And then fourth API OOR network would be for the repository communication, like sharing contents like indexes or ontologies or different kind of status messages. And overall, these APIs should be as simple as possible, and all different ontology repository implementators that would like to in the OOR network can choose which of these APIs they will implement, and they do not have to implement all of these. And we think that with technical solutions, for example, RESTful APIs, linked data, web service API, Sparkle. So clients and backends for this, for our network, may be implemented with different programming languages. And also test suites for each API are very important in our opinion. So test suite can be used to help API implementators to validate their work so that the build works as it should. And of course, And the next slide, please, 13. On this slide, we present our loop API for an example as an API. So there's the search method, which can be used for querying for ontological concepts. And then there's different methods for getting information about a specific concept, like getting labels of it, getting equivalent concepts, and getting the body of that concept. So all the super and subclasses of that concept. And these are used with concept URI as a parameter. And also it's possible to get an overview of an ontology, like the some concepts that are describing and there's also other methods, but these are the main methods. Okay, next slide 14. So what should we do next on OOR? Well, we think that we should focus on APIs. So first we should define them, and then we should test suites for validating the API implementations, and also implement some baseline implementations that help us test that the APIs are capable of doing the tasks we want them to do. And the other point is that we should focus on enabling an ecosystem of ontology and not on doing everything by ourselves, like coding everything. So we could make a one-slide presentation on what are the benefits of joining the OOR. And that would motivate all the possible ontology repository implementations on joining the network. Then we could write a guide on how to implement an OOR compatible service. And one could spiritual stuff in our opinion is the how to publish leaked data on the web, so something similar to that. And then we'd like to ask, should we organize a ESWC 2011 OOR topic? Okay, so the final slide, slide 15. So could we have something like this? This is the Lot Cloud. We proposed that there should or could be something similar, the ontologies and ontology repositories, so there are links between them and also repositories forming the OOR network. Okay, thank you. That's the presentation.
Thanks. Are there any questions? Is it chat board?
Would it
chat rather than chat?
Yes.
How do you map multiple ontologies in your repository?
Well, we have mapped them automatically and also manually by some, for example, equivalent class relations. Because we have in Finland, we have this general upper ontology. And we have all kinds of domain-specific ontologies that expand because we have created mappings between those ontologies.
Thank you.
Okay. So there were some questions here from
yes.
Yeah. This is my coin. Can I speak, or I heard somebody else? I think actually this is really good. The LOS is really great. I do have a couple questions I put on the chat. If I may, I have three questions actually. You mentioned the registry. I just wonder if you're using any underlying grid or enterprise service bus for your registration. And the second question is, when you're linking a network of ontology, there's always a question about merging the ontologies. Have you thought about it, and how would you provide a service for merging of ontology? And the third question is, is this software available for downloading trial or something?
Okay, so as for the first question, the Loose network, we have actually at the moment only our own implementations in the network. We have a demo page that can be used to add your own implementation, but it hasn't been tested really yet. Okay, so the next, the second question about the merging of ontologies. Well, the ontologies we have published are, like said, we have mapped them per simple label matching program and then used some a human expert on correcting the mappings, so we haven't yet APIs for this. We use Protase for developing the ontologies and making the corrections by humans. Third question is about the Loose. Well, the Loose is, actually we have the Onke service, which the ontologies are public with the Loose API, so you can use it. But what do you mean by downloading? You mean the software?
It's just do you just downloading the software? Oh, this is something that you put on the service on the web. It's not for people to download and using it. Because I work in life science, and there is a lot of ontology like SNOMED and CDisk. Actually, yeah, gene rheumatology or protein. And a lot of time we need to merge these rheumatology into one. Well, because they define a lot of concepts that is they're very similar to each other. So that particular work is still remaining, you know, we have a subject matter expert to do the merging. And since you're doing the network of ontology, I think that kind of question would come up often because most of it, sometimes, a lot of times, ontology has the same concept as define. And how do you deal with that, really?
Yeah. We have something like, say, 70 ontologies published in the ONC, and there's also some cases where when you make a statement, there might be a lot of concepts with the same label, and these haven't been mapped, but maybe something ultimately could be done there. I'm not sure if it really answers the question.
That's okay. So right now, Luke, is something on the web that people can use, or?
Yeah, well, the, about the software, well, we have been thinking about publishing the whole software as open source, but not it's not been done yet, but I think in the...
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, are there any other questions? Let's see.
Just one quick one. Looking at the last slide, maybe I missed something, but you seem to imply that it would be desirable to have something like the linked to the cloud. The point is that this kind of figure in particular, that it's something that is being reconstructed, but not really intentional or managed. And also the you know, the links sometimes are just a few instance level links that are made between some of the datasets. So in principle, a figure like this could be done with some effort also for existing ontologies. So I was wondering why you indicated this particular loose and soft approach to putting together relating semantic repositories can fit into the picture in kind of more authoritative integration of centralized repository.
Sorry, I didn't quite get the question, but the idea is that
No, the basic question is the situation in the log cloud that is depicted in the last slide, it's not, at the end, not very different from the situation in existing ontology clouds that you have over the semantic web. So I was just wondering what you were pointing to when you say we want to have something like this. Because in principle, we could have something like this also for the ontology cloud, for example, by taking into account, by working on others, Google or Watson.
No, this is Tim speaking. So the idea was simply that we should have, let's say, tools for motivate join the R cloud. And by visualizing the situation, it would be kind of motivating to participate there. And each color could be, for example, ontology server. So, for example, if Onki would be the yellow one, who would like to be the red one, and so on.
Okay. Peter, did you have a question? You had your hand up for a moment.
Yes, I actually wanted to provide an answer. I guess it was Mindcoin who asked about ontology mapping and merging, and also Jeff did ask about ontology mapping. First of all, the OOR sandbox as it is now, which is sort of an implementation, install of the BioPortal software, actually provides the mapping facility in the biomedical ontology arena, then, I mean, the biomedical people actually have a very systematic approach. I mean, there's an NIH roadmap, which I assume you're familiar with, that provides a very clear path as to how these things are developing, and folks at Stanford have been working on it for quite a while. So I would have to say they're quite matured in terms of, let's say, mapping your NCI thesaurus ferns with SNOMAD, with HL7 and so on. I assume you've looked at those. And try BioPortal or try the OR sandbox as it is now, and you will see how mapping is being featured. And if you know the Stanford work, Natasha Noy has been working on like Prompt, which provides ontology comparisons and so on in the Protégé platform, and their next move is to merge pull together a lot of the features on Protégé with the features on BioPortal. So in the not too distant future, one would see great improvements in those areas as well. But try to get familiar with what they are already offering.
Thanks, Peter. Yeah, I think it's pretty clear from the talks we've just had that there's a good deal of overlap among the different repositories, and we've seen that before with earlier ontology repository meetings. I think one of the issues that we need to address here and in subsequent follow-up meetings is how we can reconcile all of these architectures and APIs. I think it's pretty clear we're starting to converge a little bit on the on basic functionality. So I think it's helpful if we actually start moving in the direction of how we can reconcile these, how we can get the different APIs to align. So, and actually, one question that was raised, I think, in this last talk on the which slide here, there was a question about whether you could even have such a general server. I think this is slide 7. There is no one-size-fits-all solution. And I think that may very well be true. That's the reason why this gatekeeper and workflow management was introduced, precisely to allow different communities to have different processes and roles that are played in those processes, so that some communities might very well not be interested in having any kind of elaborate process, whereas other communities seem to, really enjoy having a very elaborate process. I mean, partly because, in those other communities, these ontologies have a real significance for things like health. And so you don't want to be casual about such ontologies. But so you can see that there's a huge variety of ways that people can approach the development and the use of ontologies. I think that's why we wanted to have this very general gatekeeper. Does it satisfy all? I really can't say it does, but at least I think it moves in that direction. Does anyone have any further comments about
the...
Ken, this is Todd.
Yes, Todd.
It looks like Anki has additional capabilities that we weren't envisioning for OOR. But this gets back now to the point you just made about if we want these various efforts to work together at some common level, we're going to have to agree what those common parts are. And then I believe OOR has in its basic assumption that you should be able to add additional capabilities if you want. But I think we still need to agree as to what the core capabilities are, and then maybe we can expand that as we come to that common agreement.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. We do need to establish the core, sort of the minimum functionality, so that we can get this network of federated ontology repositories to communicate with each other. So that's sort of a minimum. We need a kind of minimum level of service, and then you can add additional modules, and you can have a variety of approaches to the to ontology repositories. And Kim, I think, had some further comments. Kim, do you want to?
Yes. So perhaps the main main point was not that well said. So trying to present the question whether the OOR is actually needed or are the APIs the main thing to do here. So when there are so many existing repositories, perhaps try to think about what would the a few functionalities be that we would like to use in these different, for example, being able to make a query to each of the repositories for example, trying to find all concepts in different repositories that has the label fish.
Yes, that's exactly what I was getting at. I mean, the OOR initiative was intended to be to establish the APIs, the architecture and APIs, and to enable federation, and then the sandbox and the reference implementation to follow were just that, reference implementation. They were not intended to be the only implementation. Does that clarify this?
Yes, sounds very good.
Sorry, it was not intended that there would just be one implementation. In fact, there was just a reference implementation.
Okay, so perhaps it was unclear to us that this is the reference implementation and not the OOR implementation, but this sounds very good.
Okay. Mike Wayne, you have a question?
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking about what Peter was talking about, the BioPortal. I'm not unfamiliar with BioPortal. I think the issue here is because you do want to create a network of ontology, or you want to federate all of these ontologies. So the question is, if I was to using some kind of a service oriented, like a user might come up and asking for, I need a concept about some disease. And when you do such queries, because now you have a federated ontology, when you do these queries, let's assume that you also have the registry, so you know which ontology would provide you with a concept about cancer, right? And then you would go to some of the ontology, and they come up with different concept, it's slightly different. It's not necessarily it's completely different. So as a user of such federated environment, how would people or how would the system behave or dealing with that kind of result coming back? I guess that is more of my question, because we are speaking in terms of the whole federation system enterprise here. We're not talking about because Bioporter probably they have a way to mapping and still human curation, I think.
May I respond to that?
Sure.
Well, one there's two parts there. One is you're actually making the query, and then you're getting back a response as to whether the query can be satisfied or not. Then, you know, if the query is satisfied, you may want to go further and actually get the artifacts from that particular repository. So in the response case, you can just have an organization that identifies the source of the response and then decide to go there and get it. Does that get to what you're asking about in terms of the federated queries?
But for federation, because for federation, there's always the registry. When an ontology is registered to such network, it's going to say these are the service or these are the concepts that I provide, that this particular ontology provides, right? So as a system, we come in and using the services that provide by this federation of ontologies.
It's federation of repositories.
Say it again. Sorry?
It's a federation of repositories, not the ontologies per se.
Yeah, but you have to register what kind of service is provided by that ontology, right?
But service provided by the ontology?
Yeah, I mean, what are the terms that... Let's say if I'm a user, I come in and I say, tell me something about cancer. Shouldn't be the service that provided by this federated going to come back and say, these are the ontology that I know register with me, providing the definition for such concepts?
Yes, but then that same query would be sent to other repositories that are federated with the one that you're starting at, and they would come back with similar answers. But then you would just distinguish the source of the answers, i.e. the particular repositories that are responding.
Okay, so then the burden is still on the user who asking for that service going to go through all of these ontology that you know the... And then
I don't think we
the
have...
The person who asked the question, it would become a burden of the person who asked the question to go through and find out which ontology you want to use, or if you find anything, you know, like either it's conflict or it's not, whether it's conflict or it's the same, then it's become the burden of the person who asking the question. I shouldn't use the word person because it could be
a machine.
System.
Yes, it'll be on the responsibility of the entity making the query to sort through that. It has been suggested that we introduce a ranking mechanism so that people, organizations, or whomever could vote on it, as you know, and that would reflect on the quality of the ontology. So part of the burden may be minimized by having this ranking if the ranking is sufficiently sound and trustworthy. But currently, we don't have any magic mechanisms to do the work that you're suggesting, or that I'm suggesting needs to be done by the requestor.
Okay.
I have a very similar question, but it will be a little bit simpler, I think. Let's say we have two ontologies. One ontology is bio-ontology, and there is fish in this ontology. Another ontology is a culinary ontology, and there is also fish in this ontology. So you'll understandable that they have different properties, they have some intersection, but different things. Now, I want to introduce another application, a new application. and I don't want to create a new ontology. I want to use existing two ontologies and query them to get back something about fish that would satisfy my new application. Now the question is, what do I need to provide about my application? How, kind of, what kind of rules can we establish, kind of language in which we can express context? Because we understand, we all understand that ontology should be contextual. There is no single ontology, but what is the rule or ontology of this context?
Well, that gets into the issue of governance and the metadata that needs to be provided when you register an ontology. So I would assume, and this has not been brought out completely yet, is that part of the metadata would include something about the context, the domain in which the ontology is applicable or, if you like, is currently being used.
But when you say metadata, how do you see metadata? Is it another ontology or what is it?
Hopefully, it would be represented as an ontology.
Yes, but for instance, the UMV.
What did you say?
There's the OMV, the Ontology Metadata Vocabulary, which we is one of the, I think we, the OR is pretty definitely going to be using at least that for metadata about ontology.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know more. Is it a standard, upcoming standard or something?
Who is in charge of OMV?
Peter Harper from Karlsruhe.
Karlsruhe, okay. So
that's part of the NEON project. They have been around for...
Part of NEON, right.
If you go back onto the Ontology Summit 2008 communique, there's a link in there, and it's mentioned. That's sort of where we began in 2008.
Okay, I'd like to move on. We do have one more presentation, and definitely want to get into that material. Now, that's Eric, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, so can we move to that presentation, Peter?
Bring it up. Yep. So.
Peter, you... Did you hear that?
Yes. Hello?
Hello, Peter, you still there?
Yes. I can hear you.
Okay, good.
And Eric's slides are up.
Okay, great. Eric?
Yes, thank you. Good morning and good afternoon to those in Europe. I'm Eric Chen. I'm chairing the OASIS ICOMP-DC to define a standard for collaboration object model or ontology. I'll present how ICOMP standard can be used to enable contextual collaboration in OOR. So this will give you a different perspective of additional functionalities that you may be thinking for OOR. So let's go to page 2, please. This slide shows the current members of ICOMP-DC, and we are still wanting to recruit more membership to contribute to the effort. ICOMP-DC was founded in March 2009. We currently have Oracle, Cisco, Derry, Ontolog, Sentry, and a few, and Johns Hopkins. You're welcome to join and contribute to the DC, and through your contribution to the core in ICOMP-DC, and if you also leverage the ICOMP in OOR, you are affecting the technology through the core because you have your DC. The collaboration object model can be integrated into OOR for collaborative production of global network of multidisciplinary knowledge. It assists individuals and organizations in collective learning, problem-solving, innovation, and knowledge production. Next slide, please. So we're talking about network of knowledge, and we're adding collaboration entities into that network. So what do they constitute? Collaboration entities can be an integral part of the global network of knowledge. It brings in three branches of entity class hierarchy, as you see. The people branch as the social networks, derived from users, memberships, and communities, spaces, groups, and roles. Container branch defines the scope of influence and delineates the user activities into different compartments. It adds the implicit relationships in the network. The user's contributions of artifacts in the artifact branch adds the explicit relationships to the network. Let's go to slide number 5. So here I use three different colors to show the three different branches in ICOM. So ICOM is a framework that we use a common infrastructure for authentication, authorization, policy, and workflow. It brings in a broad range of domain models to the artifact branch and bring them into a common security policy and workflow infrastructure. And this is a UML diagram showing, giving you an overview of the framework. Let's go to slide number 6. So ICOM encompasses and improves on existing standards, including LDAP, CMIS, MIME, IMAP, SMTP, iCalendar, VCard, XMTP, just to name a few. Next slide. So this UML diagram, slide number 7, illustrates the hierarchical communities, which contain users, groups, and roles. It encompasses part of the LDAP directory domain. Next slide, please. This diagram shows the how ICOM encompasses the document and version control model of some general content management systems. We are adopting the terminologies and model from CMIS standard. This slide number 9 shows the unified message model that encompasses MIME, IMAP, and SMTP. It brings these message model closer to the document model that you see in a content management system. Slide number 10, please. So, understanding and application of ontologies depends on understanding the context of their development. Collaboration ontology preserves the context of development in a dynamic collection of A-box ontologies, not just a T-box concept, but a life system of A-box assertions. You can derive from this ontology users' interest and expertise. And we gave a presentation of how ICOM is used to derive the user interest and expertise from Ontolog forums. Another example, an ontology-driven development process that OOR is adopting may also integrate the bug and performance problem tracking of OOR code and content in OOR itself. Collaboration ontology can be extended for bug performance ontology that may permeate OOR content. Next slide, slide number 11. ICOM containers are active or reactive entities. A rich set of container and artifact types are defined in ICOM. They make up for the verbs in API, some of the strong verbs. So most of the collaborative activities can be implemented by create, retrieve, update, and delete operations, the so-called RESTful path operations, without needing those strong verbs. For example, when a meeting is created in a calendar, invitations to the meeting are delivered to participants' calendars. There's no need to have an invite operation in the API. So there will be trade-offs between defining operations and a rich set of concepts in ICOM. Most ICOM containers are reactive. Conference and chat rooms are highly active. Even a document folder can be animated by rule-based policies and workflows. Next slide. ICOM services support the business logic of these containers, and they are beyond the scope of ICOM specification. We just integrate these services. OOR may adopt some of these approaches. It can model the behavior aspects of containers with advanced policy and workflows. The diagram on slide number 13 depicts how an ICOM platform can be built by integrating the discrete collaboration services and content management repositories, mixing and matching the services in commercial products as well as open source products. ICOM is language agnostic, the canonical model that reduces the complexity of integrating data from different products and discrete services. It reduces the complexity of integration from n times n to n plus n by using this canonical model. The ICOM can be bound to programming languages such as Java, C#, JSON, and Arduino. Next slide, please. Slide number 14. This diagram shows one particular implementation of ICOM platform in Java. We adopted, I'm showing Java Persistent API, which is a framework that is very compatible with the kind of things we need to do for ICOM. It supports Pojo classes. It uses bytecode injection into Pojo classes to support lifecycle management, attribute change tracking, and transactions, in-memory transactions. It provides JDQL parser. Such a framework can support customizable factory providers that you may plug in to provide a data access object or a factory of data access objects or a factory of visitor objects for the JDQL parser to translate the parse tree to your own query language. Next slide, please. Slide number 15. This is probably more interesting issues for some of you. How can OR leverage the source codes or any available source codes implementation of ICOM? Oracle is contributing JPA prototype framework to the ICOM CC. That's the status. And CC is proposing to incubate the source code under GlassFish umbrella, where the reference implementation for GSRs are usually developed. The proposal is still pending. It is possible to release ICOM Pojo classes and even the whole runtime under the library JDL license. Next slide, please. Slide number 16. This slide shows the Federation Java Persistent API is suitable framework for federating multiple Java persistent unit providers. So these providers, they may be different communities or institutes or enterprises, may provide their own data access API and maybe some components or connectors that will provide data into this platform, which federate the data into one canonical model. Here's opportunity for defining standards for remote data access to implement these connectors, so that provide a platform independence. Next slide, please. In summary, ICOM builds upon content management and collaboration services that the OOR architecture may need. ICOM is a cross-cutting ontology that can permeate OOR that will lead to more effective knowledge production and reuse. Good. Let's go to final slide, please. Peter and Patrick are active members of ICOM PC. They provided valuable inputs to ICOM and to this presentation as well. This concludes the talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Any, are there any questions and comments? Let's see.
Do I understand correctly that ICOM is under Oracle umbrella?
No, it's under OASIS Technical Community, ICOM PC. On slide number 2, there are links where you can find more information about the ICOM Charter. Oracle is one of the contributors, and we initiated the ICOM in March 2009 with Derry and ESONet. ESONet is a research project funded by under EcoSpace, funded by EU.
Peter, you have a comment?
Yes, I have a couple of comments. One is, I mean, thank you. I want to say thank you to Eric. I was really looking forward to this presentation. Obviously, collaboration is important, but more importantly for the OOR project is that Eric comes from a perspective that is slightly different from a lot of the players in OOR right now, because so far at OOR or at Ontolog, we have more people from the research community and from academia, whereas Eric comes from a sort of enterprise software implementation and architecture perspective. And I think the fact that they had to develop products that that have to be in production, that have to be very robust, and also the fact that they have the code base and the development platform that would allow those types of those classes of software to be developed would help tremendously. Which also brings me back to an earlier comment I wanted to make when it was sort of posed that we OOR will be running a reference implementation. Actually, further than hosting a reference implementation, OOR actually is committed to run at least one production instance, because I mean, there of course the big guys will all be running their own repositories, whether they are open or not. I mean, the NIH or the big companies or the big research institutions, I mean, will obviously run their own repositories, but then there are still a lot of independent ontology developers who could really use a persistent store for ontologies so that their ontologies can be hosted and be discovered and used and reused. So one of the roles that OOWL has envisioned itself to play is to be the host of that open public instance. So that is another commitment that the OOR team would be working on, besides just driving or extending the frontier, doing all the research, linking up various people who are at the frontier of this technology. We also want to be in a position to provide a production box to all. That's all my comments.
Okay, Peter. I agree that's definitely the idea. But Kim has raised a point here about whether OOR could initiate a W3C process for the OOR API. And I presume that at some point one would do that. I don't know. Are we ready for that kind of activity?
We definitely want to move forward with standardization. If people read through, let's say, the Ontolog Charter, one of the things, of course, the main thrust behind the activities is to move ontology and semantic technologies into the mainstream. But the way we want to do it is through pushing adoption as well as pushing it into international standards. So if we as a community can do things, I mean, we can talk about it at Ontolog, we spin it off to something like OOR to build it, to get people to collaborate. And then the next logical move would be to take that work product into international standardization. We definitely want to do that. As an example, the quantity and units of measure standard, QOMOS, technical committee, did exactly that. I mean, we had a discussion at Ontology Summit 2009. Units of measure standard ontology was recognized as one of the sort of low-hanging fruit in a very worthwhile project. We incubated that project at Ontolog for a little bit, and then we spun that off, and now it's working under the most of the players are working as a team at the OASIS QOMOS, Quantity and Units of Measure Ontology Standard Technical Committee. And the reason we picked OASIS is because the OASIS standard is fast-tracked into ISO standard, so eventually that's the path to go, definitely. But whether or not it's W3C or whether it's OASIS or whether it goes straight to ISO depends on the particular project, depends on who the players are and what would be most expedient. So the short answer is yes.
Okay, we're getting close to the end of our time. It's almost 11 o'clock. It's supposed to be a two-hour meeting. I guess it's appropriate at this point to talk about where we go from here. I think I brought up this point that it would be helpful if we could actually start aligning our APIs and architectures, and to bring in other groups as well who are doing ontology or repository work to try to participate in that process.
To support that, Ken, could we get everyone to provide their artifacts to the OOR wiki page so that we could share them that way first?
Yes, I was just getting to that. We need a kind of collaboration format, right, it's a collaborative effort, and I think if we should at the very beginning just decide how we're going to share these artifacts so that we can accomplish this this alignment of APIs. There are standards that are language independent, like Whistle for APIs, and also there's the format that that Todd has been using, which I think is really that's really appropriate. I looked at your at what you produced, and it is actually quite easy to navigate. Except that I don't have a tool for updating it or making a suggestion of my own. So, in terms of collaboration, I need a little bit more to be able to handle that. Do other people have comments about this? I mean, just any suggestions how we could proceed to begin?
This is Jeff. Brief comment. I was very glad to hear that you and Pete both talking about standardization and getting into some kind of standard committee or something. And especially, I think it would be beneficial for this metadata about ontology. I can see that, at least for me, it is a focal point that helps to connect ontologies. Also, just my what I'm thinking about is that it is possible with some language that is not oral. I can imagine it in PsychL where ontology is based on rules. So I just see the rules necessary there. Yeah, definitely if we have some standardization in this area, it would be very helpful. Maybe we should have some specific thread in this. And as I understand, we do.
Yes. And I do know that there's provenance, there's a provenance group concerned specifically with standards for provenance information in general. And I think by combining that with OMV, I think we would have a pretty solid foundation for the metadata for the OOR. I think if we build on existing standards, it would be a lot easier to get this, to get our standard accepted. Mike, you had a comment about standardization. Mike Bennett? No, there.
Oh. Yeah, sorry. I need to remember how to... Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. Right. Sorry. So I'm new in seven different ways, as always. Really, just sticking on that same point, there's not just provenance, that's a good example, but there are a lot of things which aren't handled by OWL and in some cases shouldn't be, things like different ways in which classifications are done, various other kinds of decoration. Now, a lot of those are covered in SCOS, of course, but there's, I think at the moment, a lot of ontologies that have solved the same problems in different ways about how to annotate those. So some of them might use internal properties, some would use different kinds of metadata tags and so on. So it would be pretty cool if we found some consensus way of doing that. And with some of those, like provenance, there's a standard. Although I should add that the provenance of the content. I'm not sure if there's a provenance of meaning standard yet, but if there is, we should use it. We should start to catalogue what are the things we've all had to solve, catalogue the best and most standard solution to those, and provide one kind of vision, one view of all of that ontology metadata.
Sounds great, yeah. That definitely should be an activity we get to work on very shortly. And Kim, you had a comment about everybody should provide a document on their APIs. Yes, I suggest we need a
a wiki page where you can upload those documents. Yes, that was your idea.
Don, I suggested the architecture wiki page, or we could put a subpage under that. But a particular
Okay, the architecture wiki page definitely is the right place for it. Although that, at this point, has a lot of archival kind of information. Maybe we should start a new one to, yes, the UML, we should start a new page and you know, get to work, get as many people as many groups as possible to upload their API. And then we have to start, you know, actually trying to align these. It's not going to be that easy to align them. I mean, these APIs have a lot of functionality in them. BioPortal, for example, has like 126 methods in there in the whistle. So it's a lot of work to get all of these to be aligned.
This is where we can bring in our expertise in ontological analysis. No.
Yes, indeed. I think having an ontology for this would be just, the best way to approach it. So I think that's where we should go from here. I think it would be great to, the API for Loose is 10 to 15 methods. Yeah, that's, I prefer a smaller number of methods myself. So let's move in that direction. Get that page started, and then we should schedule another meeting where we work on the alignment.
Ken?
Yes.
Prior to that meeting, assuming everyone has posted their artifacts, we need a period for review, and then we could post comments to the wiki pages, and then take the following meeting on those comments.
That sounds like a plan. So that's a suggestion now. Post your comments on this.
Well, please have to post the
page. You have the artifacts now. First, the artifacts. Then we'll go through a review phase, where everyone makes comments on them, and then we schedule a meeting. How's that? Okay.
Yeah, sounds good. Would Ken or Todd document that on the wiki? Because on the chat board, does that becomes part of the minutes of this call?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll type real fast.
Yeah. Or the action items, the few action items at least. While Todd is typing, maybe Ken can wrap up the session.
I'm writing up the follow-up.
Oh, you're writing up.
So post your artifacts, review the artifacts on the page, and then schedule a new meeting.
Yeah. I would also prompt those who were not at the first architecture and API discussion to revisit the notes from that call, because there were certain basic tenets that were already discussed, like what must be covered, who are the players, who would be providing consultation, who would be making decisions, and so on. In the architectural decision will only be made by people who are contributing code. So we don't want backseat drivers, we want sort of people to participate and drive the project forward.
Okay, I posted a comment on that. All right, so are we ready to adjourn? Any further business?
No.
Okay. Thanks to everybody for coming. Thanks especially to all of the panelists for their presentations. Everybody, I hope you will follow up on the action items, and we'll be getting together for a new meeting.
Thanks. Peter?
Yes.
Are you going to create a subpage off the architecture page for these artifacts, or we just post architecture page directly?
Either way. I guess if each
make it a subpage.
I guess if each person creates a subpage and just index it from the architecture page, that would probably keep things clean.
Okay.
And then everyone can maintain their own page without writing on top of one another.
Yeah, that'll be better to keep the reviews easily identifiable or associated with the source that they're reviewing.
Right, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Maybe we can document that
hey, everyone.
On the chat as well. Yes.
And okay. Weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I documented that.
Great.
Okay, Peter.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye, everyone.